The podcast with Dr. Jim Keeney at www.jim.md.
Dr. Jim here with you. We've got a lot of interesting things to discuss today. Articles such as the Vytorin article that's got everybody up in arms. Should they be switching to something cheaper, generic, that might work better? Libigel, it is touted as Viagra for women. We're going to talk about some injuries due to some Christmas presents like GPSs and Wii's. And I'm taking phone calls today. If you have any questions and you'd like me to answer them, please give me a call at 1-877-DR-KEANY. That's D-R-K-E-A-N-Y. Or you can go to my website at www.jim.md. And you'll find either an email link where you can send a question to me that way, or you'll find the phone number to call. Be sure to subscribe as well so you don't miss any episodes. First, a quick rundown of the news. You may have heard about a drug called Zetia, and a study showing that it really didn't seem to reduce your risk of heart attack or stroke. Let's get into that a little bit. You know, Zetia is most often taken in a form called Vytorin, and that's where they've combined Zetia with Zocor in one pill, and that's joint marketed by a couple companies. It's about 800,000 Americans either taking the Zetia or the Vytorin. A lot of cardiologists may be saying, hey, maybe we should switch these people to generic cholesterol-lowering statin drugs because there's never been a study that shows that Zetia actually reduces the risk of heart attack and stroke. Now, you got to take this study with a grain of salt. It was only 720 or so patients, and they all had a specific problem called heterozygous familial hypercholesterolemia. That's a big fancy word for they have a bad inherited gene that makes their cholesterol go through the roof. So this is not just normal high cholesterol. This is really, really high cholesterol. And it turned out the average thickness of a carotid artery plaque actually increased on people taking Vytorin compared to a smaller increase on people taking the generic simvastatin. I don't know if that's cause necessarily to jump off the Zetia bandwagon immediately, but you got to wonder. First of all, I've never liked this drug because what this does is it took a medication that was a lot cheaper and it made it expensive by combining it with two drugs. The drug companies that way got a longer patent and are able to sell it at a higher price. Number two, this study was significantly delayed. You've got to wonder why. Well, of course, the answer is because they knew they were going to lose sales. Already, the Merck and Schering Plough stock has dropped significantly because of this announcement. So they knew this was going to have a financial impact. But instead of considering your health first, they considered their share prices first. And I think that's wrong. And this is a common practice for drug companies. What I want to know is how many studies are actually buried that we never see because they know that this will hurt stock prices. A second article in the newspaper talked about longer wait times in the emergency department, especially for people with heart attacks. What is up with the longer wait? Well, I'll tell you what's going on. This is an unintended effect of having nursing ratios. Now the hospital is required to have 4 nurses for every 1 patient in most areas of the hospital. What that means is that when we have extra patients in the ER, we cannot move them up into a bed in the hospital until there is a nurse designated to take care of that patient. So, of course, those patients back up into the ER, which also has this 4-to-1 nursing ratio, which means people back up into the waiting room because there's not enough beds to see people in. A lot of people are saying this is related to the number of people that come to the ER that don't need to be there. And that's just not my experience. Most of the people actually need to be there. What I'm finding is there's more and more sick people showing up to the ER that need to be admitted to the hospital. They then get stuck in the ER because there's no beds upstairs. There have been times where I'm treating every person in the waiting room through 2 beds out of my 20-something bed ER because every other bed is filled with patients that should have been admitted to the hospital. This is a problem called boarding. And the only way to get this taken care of is to address the issues of overcrowding in hospitals, the fact that nobody's building hospitals, the fact that ERs are closing. And this is all because healthcare is kind of a patchwork type organization here in the United States. It's a private run industry. And so people who feel that they may make a profit open a hospital. Some not-for-profit hospitals open, but they still open with the attitude that they're going to at least make money to be able to support themselves. And that's the problem is that this is not considered a public service. This is a private sector endeavor. So until we decide that healthcare is a public service, it's just not, unfortunately, going to be fixed, I don't think, anytime soon. And a lot of people, of course, are shying away from having the government run that because they feel government inefficiencies already there. And there's lots of arguments on both sides of the coin. That's way too deep for a simple country ER doctor like me to go into. I'm not going to solve the problem of American healthcare today. Let's see what other articles we have. Interesting article about a natural supplement that caused cancer in two men. These guys were taking it to build muscle. It was supposed to be kind of a testosterone natural replacement. What it really contained was testosterone and estradiol, which is an estrogen type product. When they exposed cancer cells to this medicine, they found out that it rapidly caused growth of prostate cancer cells. This is classic, natural, homeopathic marketing, which is not regulated by the FDA. You know, among these products, there are things that will help you. The problem is you don't know where they are. And even if you know a particular product will help you, say zinc for a common cold, there's some studies that show that helps. Do you know a reliable source to get it from? The problem is these aren't regulated, so you never know. I use a website called consumerlab.org. And they, for a fee, will show you their studies, independent studies of different medications and different supplements to see if they actually contain what they say they contain. We're way out after Christmas, but you know, a lot of guys got GPSs for Christmas because it's one of those cool tech gadgets that men like to get. One man, and this GPS landed one man in a lot of trouble. He apparently was following a GPS. This was not a Christmas gift. This was a rental car. He was led onto a railroad track by the GPS, apparently not looking out the window, and didn't see the train coming until the last minute. The car then stalled, and he jumped out just as the car was totaled by the train. So he was given a citation for blocking a railway, and the train company says apparently he's going to owe hundreds of thousands of dollars in damages. You know, after Christmas, too, the other thing we're seeing is a lot of Wii injuries. You know, these Wii video games have movements just like tennis or golf or bowling. But the problem is, it's just this light little device that you're holding, and people get really into this thing. And after hours and hours of playing, we're seeing a lot of what we call overuse injuries, where you strain the ligaments because of just repetitive movement. And lastly, last week, I promised to mention this Libigel. It's being touted as Viagra for women. The truth is, it is not like Viagra. What it is a testosterone cream that women apply, and we found that very low doses of testosterone in women may help with libido. Now, long-term risks, we don't really know yet, so this is something I'd be cautious about, but this is a lifestyle decision, and obviously, if you are very distressed about a lack of libido, this may be something that you want to talk to your doctor about. But I would not rush to this as something that will improve your sex life like many people are rushing to Viagra, because it's just not the case. And it does contain significant risk. Okay, this week I'm taking phone calls. First up is Marlena. Marlena, you have a question about lung cancer screening?
As a smoker, former smoker, I've always had a little bit, you know, in the back of my mind that, you know, you really have to watch out for these cancer, emphysema, that type of thing. A couple years ago, a friend of mine, she retired. Next day she went to the doctor because she'd have this cough and, you know, was having trouble breathing. She went to the doctor. Immediately it was advanced lung cancer, and she died 6 weeks later.
Wow.
So I had been asking for chest x-rays for a while. You know, when I get my mammogram, so I figure, okay, one fell swoop, let's just get that done. But then after she died, another mutual acquaintance told me that the doctor had told her that even if she had been having x-rays, that it probably wouldn't have done her any good because x-rays don't pick up any types of tumors. The more I thought about it, it's like, well, I don't really know. And I asked my regular doctor, who's an internist, and she just kind of, oh, you don't have to worry about it. You know, that type of thing. But, you know, it's in the back of my mind. That was my question. Do the x-rays show the tumors? And if not, is there another kind of scan, body scan or something?
Yeah, it's a great question. Because, number one, to say you shouldn't be worried about lung cancer, there's more cases of lung cancer than if you combine breast, prostate, and colon cancer together. So it's a significant problem. It should be something that a former smoker should worry about. So I think you're right on with being concerned about it. of course, you can't worry too much because obviously worrying all the time isn't going to really help you. But you're looking to try and solve the problem here and look into it, which I think is good. Now, the standard screening test for lung cancer has always been chest x-rays. And now you got to remember, with that standard screening test, it's still more cases of lung cancer than breast, prostate, and colon cancer combined. So in other words, it's a lousy screening test. It isn't a very good test. And so you've hit on the one situation where I would actually recommend a CAT scan of the lungs. They do what they call high-resolution CAT scan. It doesn't involve contrast. It takes about 30 seconds of scanning, or less, actually. And it scans your lungs. And you can find these. And the studies that they did, they just published them this year, showed that most of the cancers they find, more than 80%, are stage one, as opposed to your friend, who sounds like it was very advanced lung cancer at the time.
Right.
I personally think at least to get one CAT scan is very reasonable. Now, the problem is, will insurance cover it? Because it's definitely not yet the standard. I mean, these are new studies that just came out in the last year and a half, 2 years. And the studies haven't shown that by discovering it early that you'll survive longer. But we already kind of know that. The bottom line is your insurance company probably won't pay for it. But this is one of the few times where I would say, hey, if you can find one of those places that'll do the chest lung scan, CAT scan, for $300-$400, it is absolutely worth the money to at least do it once. If you've quit smoking, you said it's 8 years ago?
Yeah, January of 99.
I think it's silly for somebody to spend the $400 or $500 to get a test like that and then continue smoking. But someone like you is the perfect candidate. I mean, you've quit smoking and you want to know, is there anything there? I think it's completely reasonable to do it at least once. Now, you should also know that after about 15 years, your risk of developing lung cancer is equal to that of somebody who never smoked. So you're almost there, halfway anyway.
Oh, well, that's good to know. All right, so then I guess the next question would be, having kind of confirmed what I had in the back of my mind, that, okay, something else needed to be done, should I get rid of this internist, find somebody else?
Well, your internist is practicing standard medicine. This is really the standard of care at this stage of the game. And he may already, or she may already know that your insurance isn't going to cover it. And I think a lot of doctors tend to only offer tests that they know you'll be able to either afford or be able to get covered by insurance. And I'm pretty confident probably not going to get this one covered by an insurance company.
Okay. Well, I can always try. You know,
yeah.
I can call them and see if they'll do it. I mean, we have really good insurance. So surprisingly, they do cover a lot of stuff that other insurance companies don't.
There's a website called PubMed, PubMed.org. PubMed, 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 like published medical articles. And that's the Library of Congress online. It has all the latest review articles. And if you look up lung cancer and CAT scan, put those search things in there, you'll find a couple articles. There's a doctor named Henschke who wrote an article in the last year that talks about how this will discover lung cancer at a much earlier stage. And I think, you know, maybe you print out one, you know, don't overwhelm your doctor, but print out one or two articles and say, hey, you know, I'm really concerned about this. What do you think about getting a CAT scan? I don't think many doctors would refuse you, but they may not agree because, again, the full data isn't there quite yet. This is one of the rare situations where I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't recommend those full body scans at all. But when you're looking for something like lung cancer, this makes a lot of sense to me.
I'm sorry, how long did you say it takes to actually do the scan? Half hour?
No. Seconds. It takes half a minute.
Oh, seconds.
It takes longer for you to get on the table and for them to type in your name and everything. But the actual scan takes between 30 and 90 seconds, depending on what generation scanner they're using.
Oh, wow. Boy, I love modern medicine.
Yeah. And some of these, they don't even have you get undressed. You just lay there on the table.
That's even better. Okay, wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate everything.
All right. Thanks, Marlena. Now we have Caroline. Hi, Caroline. This is Dr. Jim. What can I do for you today?
I had breast cancer last year. And during the lumpectomy, the surgeon nicked my implant, which caused it to begin to leak.
Oh, boy.
Yes. So I was told at first that there was no problem because the silicone was encapsulated. Well, a mammogram the following 6 months later showed that there was a 5-centimeter silicone leak.
Oh, boy.
So I would just as soon leave it alone and let it be. But from what I read on the Internet, the experts seem to think that you should remove them immediately.
I'm not sure what the common practice is. I can tell you what the studies show. And, you know, you were saying that you're having some arthritic type of pains that you linked to this episode?
Well, I wonder if it's legitimate to link it to that. It's that it came on rather suddenly, but I'm no kid, so maybe it's just coincidental. So I wondered what your thoughts were about the free silicone in your body causing any autoimmune disease.
Yeah, as far as implants causing autoimmune disease or lupus or those type of things, the studies are pretty much confirmed that it doesn't seem to cause that. But on the other hand, there was a couple good studies done, one that I'm thinking of, where they looked at people who had a leak, and a lot of them had multiple different types of complaints. Among those were arthritic type of pains. And they did notice in the people where they took the implant out and left it out, those people seemed to feel a lot better. Their arthritis seemed to go away. But in the people where they took the implant out and put another one back in, whether it was silicone or whether it was saline, they still seemed to have the arthritic pain. So it seems like the only real benefit in the study show is if you take the thing out and you leave it out.
Right. I've read that.
And for a lot of women, cosmetically, that's not an option.
Well, at my age, it is. That is an option. And I think I'll probably end up doing that. But I just wondered what your thoughts were if you just left it, presuming that this arthritis is just arthritis.
Yeah, my thoughts would be this is a foreign material in your body. The surgery is relatively simple as long as your body can tolerate the anesthesia. And
right.
So if your doctor feels like you're in good enough health to tolerate anesthesia, the surgery itself, because it's only, you know, between the ribs and the skin, doesn't result in too many complications. There's a small risk they could puncture the lung if they go a little too deep. And
oh, let's not talk about that.
Right. Well, they will talk about all those risks they have to before the surgery. Those risks are small, though.
Yes.
The bottom line is it's foreign material in your body that you just don't need there. And if it is potentially contributing to other side effects, you know, I would strongly consider taking it out.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your advice and your thoughts on that, and I'll listen to the podcast. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. I'm glad to hear that you're saying you're in the older age group, and I'm glad to hear that you're with podcasting.
No, it is just wonderful.
It is, isn't it?
I am, and I enjoy it. Thank you very much, Dr. Jim.
Thanks, Caroline. And finally, Chet.
Jim.
Yes.
I know the voice. Well, the question is, why will a smoker not be used as a living donor for a liver transplant?
Okay. Now, are you considering donating, or would you be the recipient?
Oh, I was considering donating, but I am a smoker.
Okay.
And I was told they wouldn't use me for 6 months.
Then this is a family member you're thinking about donating to?
Yeah.
No, that's great. Yeah, because, I mean, first of all, a lot of people don't know that you can donate your liver while you're still alive. So that's why I thought this was an interesting question. And it's a great thing to do for a family member if you're willing to take and you understand the risks. Because when people wait on the transplant list, they get sicker and sicker. So if they can find someone that's willing to actually donate a liver, then they can get this procedure done when they're in a healthier condition. And that has some obvious advantages.
Yes.
You know, the smoking issue isn't what we would call an absolute contraindication. So just because you're a smoker, it doesn't mean you absolutely can't donate your liver or a portion of your liver. It's just that they want to see that you can quit smoking because they know that if you're smoking heavily, now a light smoker, they just want to quit recently, but a heavy smoker, they're going to want you to quit for some time because that really increases the risks to you of complications from the surgery.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But I don't know, the way people are nowadays about smoking, it's like, I don't trust them to tell me the truth, basically. Anything to get me to quit.
It's a conspiracy just to make you healthy, Chet.
That's what I'm thinking, you know.
Right. Seriously, this is if you look across any of the recommendations for all the liver transplant centers, smoking is in there. Light smoker, and they don't really define this, but a light smoker is someone that they're willing to accept pretty much immediately as long as you're willing to quit during the period of the surgery. And a heavy smoker, that's probably going to be somebody who smokes more than the pack a day. And you're going to need to quit for some time to make sure that you're in good enough health. Otherwise, you know, you don't want to, there is some risk to the surgery, and you don't want to put yourself at any more risk than you have to in the process of trying to help a family member.
All right. I was thinking that maybe the smoking caused like hardening of arteries or vessels, blood vessels, things like that, or constriction. Things like that. And
it does, but if your liver's working just fine, that's not what we care so much about. More what we care about is that the nicotine has an effect on constricting arteries immediately. So the problem is when you need good blood flow after surgery to heal, you just don't heal up right.
Yeah, you don't want to be smoking if you're... Well, I thank you.
All right. And is this a first-degree relative or a distant relative?
It's my wife.
Oh, okay. And you happen to be a blood match with your wife.
Yeah, we're both the same type, but there's a size difference also. Yeah, doctors don't really know what's caused her liver failure. One says it's autoimmune, and she's been in liver failure since she was 17. She did drink mildly. Some say it was alcohol. They really don't know. They haven't done a biopsy on it. There's no viruses involved, but because of the proTime and the bleeding, they're basically afraid to do the biopsy. She might bleed to death.
Well, that's, you know, and liver disease is a tough thing. It's, I think people hear the C word for cancer and they really get stressed out. But I really think that the liver disease is equally as stressful.
You don't want to go with liver disease.
No.
It's hard. But I'll tell you this, she had her first bleed about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the doctors at that time, and we didn't know it, they were treating her for lupus. And they were giving her all kinds of drugs that were doing more damage to her liver. They gave her days to weeks at that time. And then through the internet and diet, we've gone to 4 years.
Wow, that's great.
And her last major visit to the doctor was almost 7 months ago. And they gave her 3 to 6 months 7 months ago. So whatever we're doing right.
Yeah, well,
a lot of it has to do with diet now.
Well, keep up what you're doing, and if you can quit smoking, whether it results in a liver transplant for your wife or not, the bottom line is you're going to be better off.
All right. Well, thank you for being honest with me. I'll give it an extra special shot. Okay.
Sounds great. It sounds like a great motivator too. By the way, I mean, not many people have this kind of motivation to quit.
Oh heck, we're planning on moving to Oregon in 5 years and opening a small restaurant on the coast somewhere. I mean, we're making plans for the future.
Oh, that sounds great. All right, well, take care, Chet. Thanks for the question.
You're very welcome.
Thanks to everyone who called in today. Be sure to subscribe to my podcast on the website, www.jim.md. If you have any questions like the ones we answered today, please call it 1-877-DR-KEANY, DRKEANY, or go to the website at jim.md. You'll find that number, or you can email me with your number. Gotta run. Take care.